So today is the 19th of December, 2019, and we are on class 3 of module 27, which is the teachings of Lojong. Okay. So, this has been, it was very challenging to do the reading and the research. And I'm going to make, there's one caveat. So, in the website, you can get a few, everything is available. So there's a forum on this, take all the blames to one. So just on ready to fall. On a forum on just that line. But I was very glad I came across it because it alerted me to something. So the caveat is that, when people have been experiencing very intense trauma, have been abused, exploited, tortured, this would be very difficult to tell them. Now, if the bodhisattva were here, he or she will probably be able to explain exactly how this would fit in with their experience. But I'm going to say here that this is beyond the scope of this talk and beyond my abilities to handle. It's very complex. So I hope it's, what I'm saying is what I did the research and the notes on us, but I would call everyday blaming, this tendency we have to, so what I call everyday blaming, when we just react to things, we project, it's always the other person's fault, or it's the other who's, coming into our country, that kind of blaming. So the framework or something that I took off of was Michael's, wonderful explanation in the introduction, when you said that the Theravada tradition deals with passions, that it's to help us manage our passions, and the Mahayana tradition is to help, basically to help us deal with aggression, which I thought was very succinct and a very elegant way. So, and reading in this book and everything, it seems like almost all the slogans are telling us how do we relate to other people, how do we, in our daily life and in the relative terms of, right? So thinking of aggression, obviously there's hardly anything more aggressive, I think, than to blame people in one way or the other, right? Whether it's Hitler blaming the Jews or today, or even in our individual, right? It's a very mentally aggressive sort of, right? It's in and of itself it's aggressive. It's also at the root of physical and other kinds of aggression. You are the problem. You do this, you do that, right? So I thought that was, so before I went on to really, the slogans were, as Michael explained, is it promotes bodhicitta. Bodhi means wisdom, the enlightened heart, which is both wise and compassionate, right? So I was thinking, how do we understand this slogan, take all the blames to one, in that framework of wisdom and compassion? And I went on to get the definition of blame. So the definition of blame is that you assign responsibility for a fault or wrong. You assign responsibility. And then I went to the definition of judgment. It's the ability to make considered decisions or come to sensible decisions. So it doesn't necessarily have blaming in there. You come to the ability to make considered decisions. So in the Theravada tradition that I have been following, we use the term wise discernment, which is, I'm sure you all have, that it doesn't mean that anything and everything goes. You can wisely discern what, And so for me, I was thinking you can discern that something is unwise and unskillful without necessarily assuming you know who to blame or how much that person is to blame or how much you yourself are to blame. Right, I mean, you can. It doesn't mean not blaming means that you can do anything. So, let's see. I wish I had more organizations. So, as a beginning exercise, I was thinking that we could take a few minutes. So, what time? 2 or 3 minutes for each of us to think of something in the past that we have blamed ourselves for. You know, blame, saying that we are responsible for it, we are bad people, whatever, we should not have done that. And see if you can reframe it with wise discernment instead of blame. And so that would mean that you would recognize that what might have been unwise and unskillful, yet also see yourself with compassion for the vulnerable human being you are, even for the blaming you did. You know, that you're a human being, that you are conditioned, that you don't know everything, you make mistakes. Yes, that wasn't quite, you know, if you had to do it again, you wouldn't do it, but also with the compassion that this is what we all do, this, you know, which of us doesn't do anything. So we'll take about 2 or 3 minutes to think of something.
I think I have something that is close to what you're looking for. I remember when I was working, it was a very difficult, it was a very stressful department that I worked in, and everyone was really smart and good at what they did. We all did slightly different things. But it was it was very stressful, and we had not our boss, but his boss was really would make fun of people. If he didn't like what you said, he would be would say the most horrible things, and it was a very stressful environment. And I went back to my cubby, and I put on the screensaver, I put a saying on it, and it said, "He who forgives first wins." And that was my way of turning around the feeling of aggression that I felt being in that environment, and turning it into forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing.
Was that what you were looking for?
Yeah, you know, what each one of us would have different experiences, but yes, instead of blame, you know, you turned it around. Is that, am I getting that? Are we understanding that instead of blaming, that you thought that you would reframe it Mm-hmm. Right. So that instant reactivity is what you, you know, because in some ways the slogans are doing the very opposite of what you're always inclined to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like one of the basic, so that's what you did. Instead of what would come naturally in terms of hitting back, you did something almost the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the...
I think your point about bringing up judgment and blame at the same time is a good one, because this can be a very fine line between judgment and blame, because judgment can be just wrong. So it made me think, I can be very judgmental, and it's hard for me to forgive myself when I judge myself. So that's what I was reflecting on,
mm-hmm.
and trying to how are there ways that I can bring compassion to the harsh judgment I put on myself? I struggle with it. It's I don't know, but it's so I think that's blame as well. It's very much blame. That's how I see it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. In fact, when we were doing, Megan led the class last time, we had quite a few people talk about self-hatred, right? Like mm-hmm. how hard they were on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think of the two wings of the bodhicitta, which is wisdom and compassion, right? That's called it. And the wisdom, part of it makes a distinction between, or for me at least, the judgment and blame. But also the wisdom says sometimes blame can be very solidifying, like, you know, it doesn't move, because if this other, you know, you hate this person, you only see that person is the wrong, like, you know, like, and I remember I was in my reading, I came across a woman who said she has anxiety, and you know how she says, and that, you know, because of the mental illness, that the whole thing, she used to blame herself for being anxious, and she said, you know, we only do this with mental illness. Nobody says, oh, I blame for myself for being pneumonia, or I blame myself for being, you know, bronchitis. You know, you don't sort of, she says, anxiety is something that I have. I'm not anxious, you know. Pneumonia is something I have. It doesn't define me. And I thought that the blaming of ourselves and others has that very solid, hard, fixed, as though there's no kind of fluid, you know, like we are the same person. So if you did something yesterday, please don't ever get over it. Don't ever, you know, hold on to that identity for the rest of your life, whatever wrong you did.
To that point, I know that Lama Liz from the mountain, the Wonderwell Refuge, she and other people I've heard talk about the Tibetan language, actually, in terms of, instead of "I am angry," it's the translation would be "Anger has arisen,"
mm-hmm.
rather than "I am this," mm-hmm. "I am that," mm-hmm. "I am this."
Mm-hmm.
So it's less ego-centric in some ways,
right,
if you will.
Right.
So that it's like, okay, and someone asked about spaciousness earlier. So, okay, so there's all these many, many selves, or aspects, elements that arise, and it's just the same thing when we're sitting and we're watching something arise, dwell, and dissolve over
mm-hmm.
and over and over again, and it's the grasping
mm-hmm.
or the aggression,
mm-hmm.
right, they're trying to push away or trying to go towards something, right, pushing, pulling, that if you were to allow, if I were to allow something to arise and be like, okay, I'm seeing that, I'm seeing, you know, the anxiety, I'm seeing the fear, I'm seeing the self-doubt, whatever it may be, and just let it be whatever it needs to be and not feel like it has to be me,
mm-hmm.
whatever me is,
mm-hmm.
then it will dissolve also.
Yes.
And I think in that dissolution, there's an element of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything dissolves. And that equals to that sense of emptiness
mm-hmm.
that we talk about with,
mm-hmm.
you know, you mentioned in the Heart Sutra, Michael. And that emptiness doesn't necessarily mean like if everything's gone, it means actually there's great fullness
mm-hmm.
in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's compassion.
I don't remember where I was reading it, but one book talked about the idea that if something makes you angry, like someone does something that makes you angry, it's not that they did it to you, it's that you had that proclivity,
mm-hmm.
that thing, and I know that for me, like there's certain things students can do that I'm like, I really need you not to do that, because for me, I know that just agitate something in me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have this student, and it's like, I can't even tell him that. Like, I have one girl in this program whose sister killed herself, and I'm not sure how. Mm-hmm. And then I've had another student of my own that I think hung herself. And the boy's always taking the cord from the, you know, the shade and sort of playing with it, making, I'm like, you can't do that. He goes, why? I said, you just can't. I said, it's just too agitating. I said, I can't tell you. Like, I can't tell him. It's not his business, this other girl's sister killed herself, and it's not, I don't need to have, but it's sort of that piece of the things that, like, it's most of the time the other person doesn't know. You know, there are times when
yes.
they do.
Right.
You know, because there's times when you're irritated with someone and you think, I'm really irritated. What could I do that would really piss that person off because they just irritated me? And then you actually do intensely, like, I'm going to do the thing they don't like. But so often it's the other person is just doing what they're going to do, and it suddenly hits, and you're like, oh, they made me angry. And you're like, no.
Right.
You know, you were ready to be angry, and they touched it.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's who you are and not who they are.
Right.
Or anger arose.
Yeah, the anger. Well, the anger arises, and it's mm-hmm. you know, it's that habitual pattern of this hits that strikes a spark.
Right. You know, it says blaming others without taking any responsibility for our own actions has almost become a socially acceptable behavior. And he goes on to say, the personal belief that we have been victimized not only does not empower us, it generates apathy, resentment, and anger. You know, so there's a balance there, you know, between, you know, to not instinctively, reactively, you know, you're doing this to me, you are. You know, there's this book, The Seven Habits. Yes, please.
So just sort of piggybacking on what Megan and Elise said. So Megan and I were up at we were wondering this past week and heard Wanda John speak, and essentially, you know, like what he was saying is like the word that they both used was like anger was, it was evoked. It was already in there. It was there and it was coming out. But the other thing that they said was that I don't even know how to put it, but in simplistic terms, like blame, you know, the mind is blaming, and it's latching onto this one thing,
mm-hmm.
and you become, your whole being becomes that whole thing,
mm-hmm.
and the other person is the one that did it to you, and that's all they are. So now these two perspectives see the entirety of each person only in this narrow view.
Right.
And what they're basically saying is like, yeah, right, you know, blame is like, that's part of your character, but you and the other person are so much more
than,
and if
yes.
you could open up
the spaciousness yes.
of
yes.
who and they are really,
right.
Like, you're going to have the wisdom and the compassion is going to be there, because it's just one moment and one part of you. That's not all of you. It's just one. Like, this woman basically said, like invite it to let it sit at the table.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of other things that are at the table, and so if you practice that over time,
mm-hmm.
you're less likely to get hope like that, because
mm-hmm.
you're seeing a much broader.
Mm-hmm.
view of yourself, and
right.
and like Elise so beautifully said, like, it's not out there, it's here,
right?
and that's what he just kept saying over and over, all the things that you needed to get as a child, you were led to believe that your mother, your father gave it to you, but it was already there. They just, or they did or they didn't, but if they did, they evoked what was in you, and
mm-hmm.
it's still there and always was there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's, you know, it's like when you're blaming, you're in this narrow, constricted view
right.
of who you are, and you're not like this
contracted.
Yes.
Contracted.
Yes.
You're so much more.
Right.
And, but they also said it's okay to like bring that blaming part to the table, but let it sit with all the other things, and eventually, this blame or whatever you want to call it, it'll live and die, and like it'll dissolve and go away in something else that you don't want to come at the table.
right.
But
the next thing.
But the point is, all the beautiful qualities of yourself, if you use this practice, will the table will expand.
Right.
And then it starts expanding not only to, you know, like you and your person, but it expands to,
right.
and you make the world a better place.
Right. And
I think in you know, blame has such a negative
yeah.
kind of connotation. I don't know whether it's a translation from the Tibetan, maybe, that has
right.
it's a different word. But when you say it like this, it becomes really a positive kind of approach to any kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
And you keep mentioning the word responsibility,
mm-hmm.
which puts it in a much more positive kind of light, that it can have a very positive kind of outcome for both parties. I know the bodhicitta, of course, is to kind of spread the light, but it has a good outcome for all the parties involved.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe,
yeah.
you know, when you think of this kind of very
yeah.
positive, it helps everybody in the situation to feel better
mm-hmm.
and to be able to get along better. So I think that word blame, you know, and everybody, oh, I don't want to work for that. I don't want to. So I think that stating it this way makes it a much more positive kind of outcome, to be willing to go on to the next situation and use the same kind of philosophy and way of our interacting and being with,
right.
you know. And the other one, Chris and I read together once in a while, and we were reading the one about not taking the ox and the cow, which also has the same kind of feeding in.
Don't put the ox in
yes,
load on the cow.
Yeah, yes, you know, they're kind of interrelated in a way. The both slogans, you know,
right.
not transferring that
yes,
kind of whatever it is to somebody else's burden.
But taking it on yourself,
yes.
but understanding
yes,
what
yes,
your
and,
part
and
is.
And of course, you know,
right.
you don't want to take on somebody else's.
I always think that paradox is like at the heart of so much spirituality, isn't it? Like it's, and the paradox here, and so Pema Chodron says, you know, in slogan 12, we take responsibility for our own actions. Instead of hiding our mistakes, we face them and look for their underlying cause. So for me, the paradox is that when you are compassionate, it doesn't make you indulgent. It doesn't make you like, oh, I can do anything. I'm very compassionate to myself, right, tomorrow. But it does the opposite. It gives you the courage and the ability to really look, okay, I'm a human being. I have my faults. I'm not faults, but I have ways in which I can be unskillful. And let me look at them. It gives me the courage to look at myself. Instead of, you know, what is normally blaming, oh, the problem is out there, if he or she hadn't done that, you know. Like, it's just, in my sort of background, because I was doing counseling, they had this word, this phrase for righteous indignation. It says righteous indignation is envy with a halo on. And I said, and you know, that's the
kind of... Sorry, envy with that.
No, but that's the kind, you know, you can courageously look, where is this coming from? Is this really, am I really indignant about this? Or is there some other creeping, you know, like, with the... So that was, you know, and for me, the slogan, that's what it's saying, take the blame onto yourself and then take the... Look at it compassionately and then have the courage to see who you, you know, instead of constantly doing what is projection. Well, at least that's my understanding. I mean, like we did, you know, Megan gave us the permission last week. You can understand the slogans, each of us, in any way we want, right? So this is my understanding, that it gives courage, yeah. Excuse me?
Like Mama John kept saying over and over, mm-hmm. and Mama Liz kept saying, like, you know, can you hold all these parts?
Yes.
Can all the parts that you... And I think built into that is, like, I think they're saying, like, and you have to have compassion for yourself.
Right.
For parts.
Right.
And then if you have compassion for yourself and sort of understand yourself, you're going to be able to better relate to others, whether it's, you know, your spouse or somebody sitting on the bus or work. And so it's like having compassion for yourself and the parts that you don't really sort of like.
Yeah.
You let them come in. And they basically, I mean, I've heard it many times here, it's like, they all have wisdom. You might not be able to see it right away, but if you let them sort of metaphorically sit at the table long enough and you get to know them, then the wisdom might come out and it might turn it, you know, like a mishap into... adversity into wisdom. So they said, and they kept saying, like, these other parts of you, they have their own time, they have their own space.
Right.
You can't, they're going to do, but you just have to be patient and compassionate and let them do what they're going to do, and they're going to show you what you need over time.
Right.
And so I think that's just, I don't know, I mean, when I grew up, you know, with the an environment where nothing other than thought was allowed. So you wouldn't even have just any feeling, anything was just...
Right.
You know, unless it was logic.
That's logic, a feeling?
That's it.
Right.
Like, you're not supposed to have, you know, you're not supposed to have any feeling. And you know, so obviously the natural way of your body, mind. So I know it's just, and they basically said it's never too late. You know, whether 25 or 55 or 75 or 85,
right?
You can always start and change the patterns. And I've heard that in between Michael Fagan and Emily and Michael, like things can changing a little bit, and then it starts changing. So,
right.
What I really appreciate about this work or play or whatever you want to call it, is that there's an invitation to cultivate curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that looking into that widening, inviting, and that by looking at whatever might be arising,
mm-hmm.
you know, the pain, the mm-hmm. anger, mm-hmm. whatever, that if I allow myself to sit with that
mm-hmm.
and ask some questions of it and see if I can see where, you know, what's underneath that, if there is something, or that it actually, there's patience,
mm-hmm.
you know, patience, one of the paramitas, you know, arises.
Right.
Easier said than done sometimes,
right.
especially when that button gets pushed
yeah.
and you're just like,
yeah.
but I think, like, by doing this work, over time, I get a sense that one sense of patience can be more often than not come into play.
Mm-hmm.
There's that time can be looked at differently.
Right. And when you said button, you know, even just the awareness that it's a button getting pushed is better than not, you know, not even being aware that that's, you know, it's
yeah.
all the other person's fault, you know, like, I'm just going to take it out on them. But that's just, at least that small gap is a place where you can work on, right? And Pema Chodron says exactly what you said about, you know, part of the blaming comes from our inability to live with this discomfort that comes up. You know, just throw it out there and it might help. Or throw it inwards in a different form. Because blaming in some ways is still a distraction from what's actually happening. Because then you can go on that, you know, that papancha, that galloping horse that goes, you know, just thought.
It was interesting. I have this group of students I work with are this kind of a difficult group, and I realized, like, one day I went home and I was like, I'm so angry. I'm going to do this to them and I'm going to do that to them. And then I thought, wow, that's something. So the next class, I said, we're not doing math. I said, I need to tell you what happened. So I went home and I said, and I was upset. And my default when I'm upset is to get angry. That's where I go. I don't get sad. I don't get whatever. I said, I got angry. When I get angry, I make a list of all the mean things I'm going to do to the people who made me angry. So that's what I did. And I told them that. And I said, you know what? And then I decided I didn't really want to do that. I said, but on the other hand, you guys are doing stuff. Like, I mean, there's two parts to it. Like, kids see what gets the teacher
right.
going,
mm-hmm.
right? And then the teacher's foolish enough to make it obvious. And then the kids have this sort of, right, like the little fun of, like, let's just do, I didn't do anything, I just did that. You're like, no, you didn't. And you're like, searching for, like, holding. But it was so interesting. I thought, I'm just going to tell them. And afterwards, I thought it was really good modeling for them of, like, I saw what
right.
I did,
right.
I saw where I went. And then I actually asked them, I said, what do you think we can do? Like, how do we.
Be helpful for kids first.
What?
He who forgives first
yeah.
wins.
Yeah, no, I mean, but it was also that, you know, there was the piece of that they were, you know, there wasn't that they were never looking for, you know, we all have our little buttons that astute people look and they say, oh, look at that, you have that little button. Like, I didn't do anything, I just commented that your hat looked a little funny. You know, you're like, oh, you know, like, okay. And it's just very interesting sort of to talk with them about that and to sort of give them that as an awareness. Like, you could see yourself, because there are kids who do have that, where they suddenly get very angry about, not a big deal, but they go there, you know, or just, I'm too sad to do anything, because that's their default. So it's just sort of, you know.
I had a hard time with this exercise. And what came to my mind was someone who came to the, actually visited my home on one occasion quite a while ago. And what he was looking for was recruits for his egotistical trip of being a guru and wanting disciples who would be loyal to him and join his team. And I saw this right away, and I simply said, no. And I haven't seen him again, but over time I've also observed him, and it started to harden my judgment more and more, because I saw him going to various people, and if he had one person who might follow him and another who might not follow him, he would try to split them. When it was a matter of protecting his ass and hurting someone, he moved to protect his ass. And I saw all these things happening, but I was not directly involved in any of this. So I'm carrying a rather heavy judgment, which, and that judgment to me is lack of compassion for his difficulty. I can't tell how he'll end up, but it's not my responsibility. And to go beyond this, it seems to me that what I need to do is, regardless of who he is or how he ends up, to realize that this is simply a particular human doing what he does, and I should give up holding judgment on it, because it's not necessary that I hold any judgment. This is not easy for me to do.
So I think we have, I was thinking of another exercise where the same reframing, if you can think of somebody in your life that you've blamed for something, is it possible to reframe it? While not necessarily, you know, you might still judge, wisely discern that what that person did was. But, you know, right in from the beginning of the book, they said that to do the slogans, you need intelligent humility. And I was thinking partly humility is us saying, we really don't know. We don't, you know, we can discern that something is wrong, but I wouldn't be able to say, well, I know exactly how responsible you are for this and how much you are to blame, right. And, you know, I don't, you know. So part of that humility too might help. But if we can just think of somebody and we can sort of reframe it, well, maybe, you know, like I remember Elise has given us many examples of her students who later on you figure out, you know, they have been having a very rough time at home or whatever, but if we can just see if how that feels to shift it a little bit from blaming to compassionate and wise discernment. Let's take a few minutes for that.
Just before you brought this thought up, I was saying to myself how much judgment and blame are a dead end. And then you brought this, presented this thought. And we're probably all aware that the political situation we're in, when I talk with friends and I hear so much blame, it's a dead end. It's we're not getting anywhere to blame. And I think that, to me, partly drive all blames into one means to into the human condition, that it's a part of being human. But if you get stuck in it, and if your ego gets stuck in it, you're never going to make any progress. You get stuck in judging yourself, and you can't get beyond that. You're not going to broaden your sphere of compassion, and your ability to actually give compassion, and also to find solutions. It's part of my judgment too. People get stuck in blame what are you doing to solve the problem? You know, what are you doing to make the world a better place? So that's a judgmental one that comes out too. But it just, there's such a dead end. It's such a dead end.
Right. Someone I know who's intensely practicing has very difficult situations. And she says when she comes across a situation where she feels like she needs to blame somebody, she uses the phrase, which part of your suffering is expressing itself right now?
Which part of your own suffering?
That person's suffering. So that's a compassionate reframing, right? That she asks herself, what part of your suffering is expressing itself right now? And that, and very often I think, even in the political climate, the suffering of fear is being expressed in a lot of different, like hatred and otherizing and all that, but there's a lot of fear. So I found that phrase, that would help me not to blame.
Wow.
So that leads to the other, I think, in all my reading, it's all jumbled, who said what, so I'm not going to quote the right person. But so one of the things about Bodhicitta, it talks about our connection with everybody, right? So that's the antidote to blaming and hating and the aggression, as Michael said, Because the delusion is that, you are out there and you're this awful person and I'm nothing like you. How can I be anything like you? I'm this very virtuous person. And as soon as you sort of dissolve that, we are both the same. We both, Goethe is supposed to have said, you are not spiritually evolved until you recognize that anything that anyone can do, you can do too under certain circumstances. Mm-hmm. It's the conditions. And you've been at war, and I've been in a country that had a terrible civil war. And people say, you'll be surprised at what you can do at certain moments when extreme situations, who you are willing to sacrifice. So you can never rest in this kind of complacent thing. I would never do that. We all have it in us. Like you said, it just depends. Maybe our threshold is different, but it can come out. And I've seen that. So once you understand, this is conditions, you're in this condition and you're doing that, there but for the grace of providence, could be me. A lot of the blaming, at least for me, it kind of, the reactivity becomes less. I'm not saying it goes away, it's a threshold, but it's like, I could do this under these circumstances. Who knows? And there's also this thing, I don't know if the Buddha really said this, but I came across it, that the Buddha said that the only difference between the murderer and him is that the Buddha knows that he can be a murderer, but the murderer doesn't know he can be a Buddha. You know? You've heard that, right? So here he is saying there's no, you know, this is our connection. This is how we all are. You know, we are. Huh?
I love that phrase, that statement.
Yeah, that we know we can, you know, under certain. So even as we wisely, for me, as we wisely discern this is not the right thing to do, you can't take away that other part, the suffering, you know, like the righteous indignation, right? Oh, I would never do that. So
I just wanted to make a comment. I'm thinking about a class Michael and I are taking on Shakespeare, and there's one person that talks all the time. And, you know, he's sort of combative, but he also has a lot of good things to say. You know, he's really very, he takes a lot of airspace. So, you know, I was just thinking about how to look at that. And so the first step, instead of the judgment is something that totally solidifies. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we solidify, then it's myself and
right,
other.
Right.
And then there's not a lot of give and take, you know, mentally there.
Right.
But the first thing I try to do is look at why I'm feeling irritated. And partly it's that it's harder for me to speak in that group. You know, there's like all these really seem like some very intelligent people that can analyze Coriolanus and all these parts of the play.
Thanks for that.
And that and how that relates to that. And I'm always like 20 steps behind, and I feel... So first I look at my own sense of inferiority, and this guy, you know, I'm already projecting he's a bright Jewish lawyer male. Right, and it's just sort of I got him, you know, and I'm sure I'm right, and then I see my own pattern of, you know, somehow I can't quite think that fast. I'm really better at writing things and having time to reflect, but in a give and take, you know, so I'm judging myself, mm-hmm. And then the other side is that open the field of compassion, mm-hmm. And think about the fact that he expresses himself like this a lot because he probably has a need to be heard, mm-hmm. And to, mm-hmm. be thought of as really important. And actually, I met one woman who was there yesterday. I knew her from I knew her from Brandeis, but also from other things. And she said, oh, well, I didn't sign up for the afternoon class because I knew he was going to be there. And she only would go to the morning class. And I'm thinking, oh, I get it. But it's interesting, you know, like, sometimes you take yourself out of situations because you don't want to be, you know, bothered or injured or irritated. And other times, well, maybe you can't, but the learning comes when you're really willing to feel the pain yourself, what it is that's, mm-hmm. rubbing you. First the rub, mm-hmm. And then I just, what you expressed tonight, and I didn't realize that part, is then put yourself in that person's place and look at it from their eyes, what is motivating them. Mm-hmm. And then there's much more compassion, as you said, mm-hmm. that arises in that,
right.
situation.
So, you know, I mean, this is a, you know, the slogans are meant to help us with our relative lives, right? The relative part, mm-hmm. of our lives. So if I were a leader in that situation, I think it's perfectly okay to say, you know, each person gets a chance to talk. But I think the part that's unnecessary is you need to stop talking and you're a terrible person. You know, you can, yes. just do what you need to do and just let that part go, you know, about how much to blame that person is for monopolizing everything. And, you know, so, yeah. But we have a little time, and I just want to go back to one, you know. So when you think of the Buddha's the compassion, you know, and not blaming, the Metta Sutta, you know, which we did, the loving kindness, there's this one line about how a mother, you must love all human beings like a mother. But actually the word that is used, this is Gil Franstorp, you know, it says, as a mother protects her child. It doesn't talk about love. It's about giving safety. And, you know, in the precepts, I was thinking it's in some ways it's all about safety. So when you say, I've said this before, but what it's saying is you, if you are an ethical person, if I am an ethical person, you are safe in my presence. Because I will not harm your body. I will not take something that belongs to you. I will not exploit you and all that. And I was thinking, the safety that you give when you don't blame people, when you are with people, when you are with a teacher or a parent who might, you know, discipline and who might guide you, but not that, you know, the safety of not being blamed, mm-hmm. you know, of, I think that's just a all-encompassing kind of compassion, you know, like, for not being, you know, so.
And these thoughts we have do affect others, I mean, even if we keep them to ourselves,
right.
making all these judgments and condemnations, you know, issuing all these different decrees.
Right.
You're going to hell forever, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, these do affect an atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when you're supportive, meaning being open, you don't have to have an answer for this problem of irritation. This person's bugging the shit out of you, you know, but if you're willing to just be open to it, then you're not feeding the whole process.
Yes,
yes. You're making it more difficult to actually deal with, and you're not dismissing that person.
Right.
You're able to actually hold that person somehow in
yes.
some way, in openness. And that in itself, compassion is not just feeling warm and good about
right.
something. It could just be really, there's this term equanimity we have, which is actually just a complete willing to
right.
be neutral and not, I have to love you.
No,
death
no.
in order to make it, you know, to accept you.
To accept you, and that's why, you know, that this teacher about the pretty, to protect you in the sense that I will not be aggressive. I will not, you know, I will not, I don't know what the word is, but you are protected in my yeah. presence.
That's a really, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, it's safety. I mean, when you're, you know, in training for conflict resolution and for training for brainstorming, mm-hmm. The first thing is we're creating a safe, and the rule is we create a safe environment for everyone, mm-hmm. and the rule is you just don't put anything down. All ideas are out there, they're all on the table, mm-hmm. and so creating a safe environment yes. is very, very close to creating a compassionate environment.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And you
I
know
like
those
that,
of those who have, you know, sometimes I'm sure in the Buddha's time safety was a huge issue, right? Because they were bandits and, you know, it wasn't as, but also recently, remember, people were wearing safety pins.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And I was thinking that's such a compassionate because it's, you have to feel unsafe to know what that means when somebody has a safety pin that says,
what does it mean?
So in my presence you are safe. It doesn't matter what color skin you have. Yeah, that was a safety pin. Like if you were a Muslim or, you know, you were a different color, they're yeah. saying, you can turn to me. You can turn to me. And that, you remember the safety
yes,
pin?
Yes,
no? I
started
did. With
yes.
the Muslim band.
Yeah, yeah, with the Muslim band. But they're saying, no matter, I am offering you safety.
Yes.
And,
yeah. Huh? The travel band. It started with...
Yeah, the Muslim yes, band, yes.
That, oh, yeah. I didn't know it.
Right.
Yeah.
And for those of you who might not think so, I'm a Muslim, or I was born one. So to have that safety, you know, to say,
yeah.
and that's just so, I don't know what I have words, I don't have the words to describe what that means when they say, you know,
wow.
if you are in a
wow.
train and I'm wearing a safety pin, you can turn to me.
Wow.
It means you're not being blamed. So, yeah, you're not being blamed and, you know, so this whole slogan has, you know, it's very profound and can be understood in so many ways, but I thought that would be a good place to end it.
I actually had one
yes.
thing was that Extinction Rebellion, which is this activist climate change group, one of their basic premises is not blaming people.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so easy to say it's the fault of people who own big parts of the world. And if you say that to people, that's not how they jump in and say, oh, let me join you.
Right.
Right.
You just say, we're not blaming people. We're just saying, here's what is.
Right.
Right. What are we going to do? Let's not, it doesn't improve this.
That's the key point of this driving all blame into one, is meaning that you're removing blame from the situation in order to understand it clearly.
Right.
That it's not something necessarily personal. That I mean, yes, it's true. I disengage from my own personal judgment. But I'm also helping to absorb the atmosphere of judgment. Finality, so we can actually explore the concerns together, and you know, find a way of cooperating. So that's I think that's really important, particularly now, because everybody is polarizing in so many different ways over so many different things.
Right, and you know, the chant that most you know, when I was in, I mean, Sri Lanka, is, you know, I seek refuge in the Buddha. I seek refuge. It's not like I'm praying to the Buddha to give me something, or, you know, to solve my problems. What does it mean, refuge, you know? The safety that comes.
Yeah.
It comes back to that concept of being protected. You being protected, yes. Did you want to say something,
no,
Michael?
No, I think that's a fine way.
Okay.
Yeah, that's very good.